You remember earlier I asked you to hang on to those two words, interests and investments in space? Well, we're going to talk about them now. This is a book by NASA scientist John Lewis. Untold riches, he says, from the asteroids, comets, and planets. There's gold on the asteroids. There's magnesium and cobalt and uranium on Mars. There's helium-3 and water on the moon, he says. And whoever gets to these planetary bodies and controls them is going to be rich beyond compare. But unfortunately, they have a problem. I ask you to take out this word mine here. Who will mine the moon? Take out the word mine and in its place put in the word own. The United Nations has a moon treaty that says nobody can claim ownership of the moon. There's a treaty called the Outer Space Treaty of 1967 that says nobody can claim ownership of any of the planetary bodies. They're the province of all humankind. There can be no weapons in space, they say. There can be no military bases on the moon. And so the author here says, asks the question, will the moon become the Persian Gulf of the 21st century? With helium-3 on the moon, he says it could be used for fusion power. It could make the profits of the oil corporations look like nothing. But we come back to that pesky moon treaty of the United Nations. You might recognize this name here, Harrison Schmitt, former U.S. astronaut. He's a geologist by trade. And he's created a corporation that wants to go and mine the moon. This is an article he wrote for Space News. And he says, the strong prohibition on ownership of natural resources causes worry. We got to get rid of that moon treaty so that they can go in there and mine, he says. And so they've asked Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, a right-wing conservative from Southern California, to introduce legislation that will allow American corporations to circumvent the Moon Treaty and the Outer Space Treaty to go and make land claims. Now, how many of you have heard, I'd like to see a show of hands, how many of you have heard that we're going to Mars so that we can look for the origins of life, so that we might better understand where we come from as a species? Well, that's not exactly true. They say that we're going to Mars to set up human mining colonies, originally to be deployed by the year 2016, but now because of two recent Mars failures, that date's been pushed back. They still have to go and finish mapping the surface of Mars. Then they're going to send in little rover landers powered by plutonium, launched from Cape Canaveral, to go around and begin looking at the soil. Then they're going to do soil extraction and return missions. And then after that, they say they're going to set up human mining colonies powered by two nuclear reactors launched from Cape Canaveral, Florida, on rockets with 10% failure rates. But they say they have a whole nother problem. It takes a year to get to Mars with conventional rocket technology. And because of that, because of space radiation, being in space for a whole year, an astronaut's body would turn to jello. And so they say we have to find a way to get there quicker. So they've come up with the idea of the nuclear rocket to Mars with nuclear reactors for engines launched from Cape Canaveral. And so today, Los Alamos Labs in New Mexico and the University of Florida Nuclear Engineering Department, where I live in Gainesville, is working on the nuclear rocket to Mars. And NASA has begun a PR campaign to try to sell the idea of the nuclear rocket to the American people. They say, coincidentally, the nuclear rocket would also have military applications. Well, you know, I told you before about this International Space Station that's being constructed just above the planet Earth. They say when it's all done on a clear night, you'll be able to actually see it. Originally, it was going to cost $10 billion. But today, the price tag is $100 billion. All right. So if it went from 10 to $100 billion, and it's being built just above the planet Earth, what is the total cost of a whole series of Mars missions when it takes a year to get to Mars, right? So I've been trying to find this number, and I can't find it anywhere. But then I noticed a couple years ago, 1999, they were holding a conference called Space Congress at Cape Canaveral, and they were going to have a Mars workshop. So I went and I paid my $50. I go to the workshop, and there's 100 people in there. And the guy running the workshop, I thought, would be a scientist. But it was not. He was a concessionaire. Now, what in the hell is a concessionaire running a Mars workshop? What does he know about Mars? Well, he says, ladies and gentlemen, at the Kennedy Space Center, we get 2.5 million visitors a year, most of whom are children, who will be taxpayers in the year 2020. And we are doing a complete multi-million dollar renovation of the Kennedy Space Center tourist facility on a Mars theme so that these kids will support everything space. I'm saying, oh my God, I know there's some money involved in this now. And well, when I got home, he didn't mention that day the cost, but a few months later in July of 1999, thanks to my trusty subscription to Space News, they have this editorial, Mars missions are affordable. And they say early estimates for the Mars missions quickly ran up to $400 billion. Now, I want you to multiply that times 10, the usual factor for cost overruns, okay? We're talking some real change here, you know. But they say Congress cut funding. But now, friends, the funding is getting back on track. And being responsible, the responsible people that they are, they've come up with a plan to pay for these missions. They say many agencies run popular entitlement programs where there is plenty of fat and pork that could be cut. Now, I don't know about you, but after the years of Ronald Reagan and George Bush and Bill Clinton and now George Bush II, which entitlement programs are they talking about that they're going to cut? Okay, let's see what's left. Social Security, that just in today's paper we were reading this morning, that they're saying that they might have to raid the Social Security lockbox in order to pay for the growing demands because of military spending increases and other such things after this big tax cut they've recently had. So besides Social Security, there's Medicare, Medicaid, and AFDC, what's left of the welfare program. And your entire life now, you can only draw welfare for 5 years in your entire life. So these are the programs they say they want to cut in order to pay for the space stuff. So I've coined a phrase to describe this. I call it pyramids to the heavens. These aerospace corporations are the new pharaohs of our age, building these pyramids to the heavens. And we, the taxpayers, will be the slaves to build them. And we won't get much in return. One thing we will get, though, is space camp. Space camp is where they bring kids from all over the world to come and learn to be astronauts. And in fact, they have a space camp now for teachers where NASA is developing an interactive computer relationship with every science teacher in America so they can reach virtually every kid in America. And then they also have space camp for corporate leaders, as they call it, corporate space academy. So they really have created a plan to essentially indoctrinate major layers of the American citizens. And just last December, to kind of top it all off, the Department of Energy announced that because of the growing demand for space nuclear power, they can't produce enough plutonium. And so they say they're going to have to expand plutonium production at two Department of Energy facilities, Oak Ridge in Tennessee and Idaho Falls, Idaho, to meet the growing demand for space nuclear power. So let me wrap it up by showing you this book. This book was written by a congressional staffer. He was asked by Congress to write the definitive study on what's it going to take? What are we going to need? How's this whole space control and domination thing going to work? And you know how the foreword of a book is signed by people who say, oh, we recommend it. We suggest you read this. See if you recognize any of these names here, the people that signed this book. Maybe John Glenn. Bill Nelson used to be the congressman from Cape Canaveral, went up on the space shuttle. He's now our new U.S. senator from Florida. John Kasich, former chairman of the House Budget Committee, recently retired. But when I saw these two names here at the top, I was blown away. Ike Skelton and John Spratt. You know who they are? I watch C-SPAN all the time. And I was watching C-SPAN April 1999. They were having the floor debate on the decision to deploy missile defense as soon as technologically feasible. And if they voted yes, this would have given the President of the United States the authorization to deploy, take it out of the hands of Congress, deploy as soon as they're ready to go. And the vote that day in the House was 345-71 in favor of deployment of missile defense as soon as technologically feasible. In the Senate, the vote was 97-3 in favor of